Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CMPL podcast. This is the edition for September of 2023. My name is Megan. I'm a librarian based at the Main Library in the Adult Services and Outreach Departments. Well, Adult Services, working in Outreach. And I'm joined today by Sarah.
Hello.
And Kathy.
Hello.
And we are here today to give you an overview of the books that we have chosen for the 2023 Battle of the Books. So this event is for adults. You might be confused in thinking that it is for children. And there is a Battle of the Books for children. And that is where we got the idea. We absolutely copied the kids, but they were having so much fun, we thought it was unfair that adults wouldn't get to have the same fun. So it will be on Saturday, November 18th at 2 p.m. here at the Main Library in the auditorium. I think this is the fifth year that we'll have an adult Battle of the Books. Nice. And it's a trivia program. It's been fun in the past. You can come with a team. All the trivia questions are from the six books that we've chosen. So you're going to get the inside scoop right now on why you should read these books, but then take notes and come to the battle to eat snacks and win prizes.
Yay. Yes, and don't be intimidated by the fact that it's trivia. We won't be asking super detailed, nitpicky questions, but more the kinds of questions that, you know, if you read the book carefully, you would probably remember this detail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's no essay questions. Mm-hmm. Everything will have one correct answer. All right. So we'll talk a little bit more about that again at the end. But for now, let's get right into the books. We've tried to choose books from a variety of genres, as we always do, and try to pick books that had good reviews and that have been popular. Honestly, this year, I think we did a great job because we have a little display downstairs and we cannot keep it filled.
Oh, great.
The books have just been going out like crazy. So these are books that are available at all three branches in regular print. Most are also in large print, yes, as well as ebook and audio formats. And okay, the first one that we're going to talk about is The Dead Romantics by Ashley Poston. This is a romance book that came out in 2022. It was a New York Times notable book of 2022, as well as a Good Morning America book club pick. It is a romance, but it's not overly spicy. So if that sort of thing you think is not for you, I think that this one is fairly tame and you can enjoy it, even if you don't think you like, you know, spicy romance books. It follows a ghostwriter of romance novels named Florence Day, who is a ghostwriter for one of the most prolific romance authors in the industry. But she has a problem. After a terrible breakup, she no longer believes in love. So she's having a very hard time finishing her ghostwritten novel on time. She goes to meet her new editor, and she thinks he's very attractive, but very unpleasant. So it's sort of a instant dislike. But she gets even worse news than the fact that she might lose her career when her father dies. And this isn't giving anything away. This happens like in the first chapter. So she has to go home for her father's funeral. But her family runs a funeral home business and she sees ghosts. She has for years, ever since she was a child. That's part of the reason she left home many years ago and has not been back. But of course, she has to go back for her father's funeral. While she's home, she finds a ghost standing at the funeral parlor's front door, too tall and too broad to be her father, because of course she's hoping she sees her father's ghost. And he's just as confused about why he's there as she is. Romance is most certainly dead. But so is her new editor. That prickly guy from earlier in the book. And so she's going to try to help him pass on by wrapping up his unfinished business. But she's got a lot going on. So between them sort of being forced into proximity, although he's a ghost and no one else can see him, and her trying to come to terms with her lack of faith in love, in her career, and coming to terms with everything she left behind when she left her home and her small town. It's very cute if you ever watched Gilmore Girls, that sort of Stars Hollow feeling where there's a small town, everybody knows each other, everybody's very good at snappy banter. That is the sort of feeling that I got from reading the Dead Romantics. One of the reviewers said the zippy banter between Florence and nearly everyone else she meets can keeps things moving at a sprightly clip. And that's true. It's just sort of a quick read, a fun read. And it's been super popular, and I hope you like it too.
And the audio was good. A narrator on the audio was very good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's our first choice, The Dead Romantics.
And our next choice, going in alphabetical order by title, is Early Morning Riser by Katherine Heine. And this book came out actually in 2021. So still recent, but not that long ago. It is also. It also takes place in a small town and is about people who are all up in each other's business. But the story is about a young woman named Jane. She has just moved to Boyne City, Michigan, to take a job as an elementary school teacher. And within the first few days of living in Boyne City, she meets Duncan, who is a local woodworker and repairman. And she falls in love with him. He's charming, he's handsome, he's older than her. And while it turns out that he's dated almost every single woman, not only in Boyne City, Michigan, but in most of northern Michigan itself. So poor Jane suddenly realizes that every woman she meets is possibly an ex-girlfriend, and that Duncan is pretty much involved in the lives of nearly everyone in town, which means that she, while dating him, is involved in all of their lives, especially Duncan's ex-wife, Aggie, and Aggie's new and slightly strange husband, Gary. And not only them, but Duncan's coworker Jimmy, who is a young man with intellectual disabilities, and Duncan acts as almost a second parent to Jimmy. So Jane finds that she has quickly involved in the lives of nearly everyone in town. But that's okay; she can get used to that. But then there is a terrible car accident, and everyone's lives are changed and intertwined ever more tightly, and there's not really much more plot to go into without giving too much away, but I would say that this is sort of a quite an introspective novel. It's also quite funny, but it's about what it's like to live in a small resort town where all your neighbors know all your business, and what it's like to sort of create an unconventional family.
I really, really enjoyed that book.
Good. I hope to read it as well. I love a Michigan author. I
Yeah,
love being
it's
able to kind of
worthwhile.
place that,
Right.
the things then that happen.
Yes, and every year we do try to pick at least one book that has a Michigan connection. So this is our Michigan book for the year. And I will say that most people who read it when we did it in the Books on Tap book club, they said that yes, it did read like the author knew the area, that it wasn't just, she picked a setting out of a box, but actually knows the area, the descriptions of things, and how long it would take to get from one place to another were authentic.
And how to pronounce the cities and places.
Mm.
Yes. Our third choice is for Battle of the Books is Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus, which was published in 2022, has rave reviews, and is very difficult to get a hold of because it's so popular. But basically, it's about two scientists with a major in chemistry, a beloved, highly intelligent dog, an endearing and talented daughter in a popular cooking show. At the dawn of the 60s, Elizabeth Zott finds herself in an unexpected position. She's the star of a television program called Supper at Six that has taken American housewives by storm, thanks to her unique approach. And after surviving a harrowing sexual assault that ruined her chance at an organic chemistry PhD in 1952, Zott takes her UCLA master's degree and accepts a job at a research institute, where she falls in love with an equally driven Calvin Evans, a Nobel Prize nominated scientist. After enduring another personal tragedy and more infuriating harassment, and she, the author, does a great job describing the misogyny that takes place in the 50s and 60s toward women. Zot leaves the Institute to host the local TV show Supper at Six, in which she shows respect for her homemaker viewers by focusing on the chemistry behind cooking and nutrition. The book also has a long-buried secret at a corrupt orphanage, a mysterious benefactor, as well as an extremely intelligent dog named 630, who has a very large vocabulary. And that's where some of the fun comes in with, you know, you're in the mind of a dog, and it's terrific. How exactly she was cheated out of her doctorate and lost Kelvin, the love of her life, and the father of her daughter, Madeline, are central elements in the story, but feminism is the spark that makes it fizz. In addition to her serious look at the frustrations of a generation of women, Garmus adds plenty of lighthearted fun. There's a mystery involving Kelvin's family and a look at the politics and dysfunction of a local television station, which are hilarious at points. There's plenty, which is I was happy with, of just desserts doled out to the truly rotten bad guys in the book. Lessons in chemistry will make you wonder about all the real-life women born ahead of their time, women who were sidelined, ignored, and worse, because they weren't as resourceful, determined, and as lucky as Elizabeth Zot. She's a reminder of how far we've come, but also how far we still have to go. So I highly encourage everyone to read it.
Yeah, it has
really
been.
I really enjoyed this one as well. It was quite funny.
Yes. And yeah. I loved all the just desserts that were doled out. Excuse me.
It is nice to watch people who've been so awful get a little taste of their own medicine, cooking, chemicals, whatever.
I know. And the description of what happens between some of the bad guys and her is part, you know, some of the funniest parts of the book.
Mm-hmm. And I do, like, there's a lot of plot in this book, for sure. Uh-huh. But for me, I do think that the characters are what made it. Like, they're so, each person is very, like, they have their own point of view. They have their own little thing that it makes them theirs. And they're all really unique and vibrant.
Including 630, the dog.
Yes.
With the largest vocabulary in canine history, probably. And, you know, that was fun too. So,
yeah. Yeah. So Lessons in Chemistry, if you haven't already read it, go ahead and put it on hold, I guess, because
yeah.
I read it in large print. It's been, you know, it's over a year old, but it's just been really popular.
Does anybody know? I think that there is a TV show in the works for it, if not already.
Yes, they released a trailer for it. It's going to be on Apple Plus, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the library will ever get it, but it is going to be coming out at some point. I don't think it's out, but the trailer has been released.
You know everything, Megan.
It just makes me sound like I watch a lot of TV.
Okay.
All right. You want to tell us about the next one, Never Caught?
Oh, that's right. Okay. So sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Never Caught by Erica Dunbar is our fourth selection. This is a nonfiction book. And in fact, it was a selection for our Let's Get Real nonfiction book discussion group, which if you're out there and wondering about it, please, please feel free to join us at any time on the third Monday at 6 o'clock in the evening. We have some pretty lively discussions. So the story is about George Washington and one of his slaves. When George Washington was elected president, he reluctantly left behind his beloved Mount Vernon to serve in Philadelphia, the temporary seat of the nation's capital. In setting up his household, he brought along 9 slaves, including Ona Judge. As the president grew accustomed to northern ways, there was one change he couldn't abide. Pennsylvania law required enslaved people to be set free after 6 months of residency in the state. So, rather than comply, George Washington decided to circumvent the law. Every 6 months, he sent the slaves back down south just as the clock was about to expire. 6 months after that, he'd bring them back up. At age 15, Ona was chosen among the few household slaves out of hundreds to make the trek to the temporary capital of New York City, where Washington had just been sworn in as the new president. In Philadelphia, there was a growing abolition movement, and when it was decided by the Washingtons that Ona was going to be given as a wedding gift present to her, the First Lady's objectionable granddaughter, and by that I mean she would have temper tantrums, she was very volatile, and had a bad reputation with everyone, you know, at Mount Vernon, Ona had had enough. This is after about 5 years of being one of the slaves in the Washington household. On May 21st, 1796, she slipped out of the executive mansion in Philadelphia, boarded a transport to New Hampshire, probably with the help of the free Black community, and started a new life there, but not without being hounded by Washington's slave hunters. This is, as the critics say, a startling, well-researched slave narrative, seriously questions the intentions of our first president. The book describes her suspenseful escape and the courageous risks she took to maintain her freedom. And this book does describe the awfulness of enslavement and Washington's part in it, but she does not. It's not a diatribe against the Washingtons. It's a factual description, well done, of the times and the mentality, including Washington's, that slaveholding was perfectly fine. An interesting side note is that this book was published in 2017. In 2015, Erica Dunbar wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times, and it was sort of a synopsis of Ona's story. And unfortunately, the title of the piece was sensationalized by the paper without her permission, and the title became George Washington, Slave Catcher. And there was an even more sensationalistic graphic depicting Washington standing in full battle regalia on the chained hand of a disembodied slave. As a consequence of the article, Dunbar began receiving hate emails, some of which threatened to lynch her. So her mother sorted through them for her and divided them into two folders, one of the horrible emails and one of the positive emails. And that's, you know, one of the unfortunate side effects of writing something that many people would take objection at about the first president of the United States.
I haven't read this one yet, but I did hear from a few people who were at the book discussion, and everyone said the book was fascinating and that it was very, I don't want to say easy to read, but that it didn't read like homework, that it was interesting and kept their attention, and that it was just a fascinating story. So I do think I will get to this one eventually, and I might listen to it because I believe it is available as an e-audiobook.
Yeah, and it's narrative nonfiction, kind of meaning that it doesn't read like a textbook, as you said, Megan. The author uses creativity in imagining what Ona must be feeling and thinking when they knock on her door and she's got two children and they're trying to drag her back into Washington's, you know, custody. And I think it's common sense, you know, all of the things that they might be, that she's attributing to Ona's feelings. And that's the great thing about narrative nonfiction, is the author puts their, you know, creative ability into the factual, you know, story about Ona Judge and the Washingtons and the times. And it's hard to believe that those existed.
So that's our nonfiction pick. Just one for out of the six.
Yes. Which looks like it's time for our fifth pick for this year, which was Remarkably Bright Creatures by Shelby Van Pelt. This also came out in 2022, and like Lessons in Chemistry has had a waiting list for nearly the entire time it's been out. But there is good news. Not only has the holds list finally exhausted itself, but we have access to Remarkably Bright Creatures on Hoopla, which is the app where the books and audiobooks are instantly available. So there will never be any wait on the ebook or e-audiobook version of Remarkably Bright Creatures if you download Hoopla right now.
Don't wait.
After that little.
Download Hoopla today.
All right, after that little plug, the summary of Remarkably Bright Creatures, which so far everyone I've talked to has loved. It is about Tova Sullivan, an older woman whose husband has died, and to keep busy, she works the night shift at the Sowell Bay Aquarium in northern Washington State. She's very good at tidying, so she might as well make some money doing cleaning for the aquarium. She befriends the giant Pacific octopus who lives there. His name is Marcellus, and it turns out that Marcellus is very extremely intelligent. Tova likes to walk around and say goodnight to all the sea creatures as she's doing her rounds, and one night she notices that the octopus is not in his area. Instead, he is in the staff lounge trying to get a snack. But Tova helps Marcellus get back into his tank, and after that, the two form a friendship. Now, I will say that this book is partially narrated by Marcellus, so you have his perspective, but he does not actually speak to the human characters. You just know what he's thinking, which gives extra insight into what's going on. Now, our third main character in this novel is Cameron Cassmore, a troubled young man who has come up north to Sowell Bay looking for his long-lost father. And he also takes a job on the night shift at the aquarium. And as these three characters come to interact, they realize that their lives are more intertwined than they could ever know. And Marcellus decides that he must help them solve the mystery of what happened to Tova's 18-year-old son, Eric, who vanished 30 years ago on a boat in Puget Sound, and even to Cameron's long-lost parents. Marcellus has all the answers.
I can't wait to read it.
It's very good. It's very sweet. It's another story about people coming together and healing from their various traumas in the past.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and I do plan to listen to the audio from Hoopla because it is narrated by someone that I've listened to before. Marin Ireland, who usually does a great job. And so I'm looking forward to that. There are two narrators, probably for the two different perspectives.
Yes, I believe it's one narrator for the human characters and a different one for Marcellus the octopus.
Yeah, sometimes I forget about Hoopla. And because I'm so used to, downloading in Overdrive, and it's such a pleasant surprise when something's available. And as you say, obviously, no limitation on the loans.
No waiting. So if you've been looking forward to it, there's no reason to wait anymore. You can read it today. All right, I will describe our last pick, which is The Verifiers by Jane Peck. This was one of the Washington Post best mysteries of the book of the year. Last year, it was published in 2002. 2022. I'm sorry, The Verifiers was published in 2022. It was also named one of the best books of the year by NPR, Book Riot, the South Florida Sun Sentinel. and others. And this is the first in what will become a series, but you wouldn't have missed anything since this is what launches it. Our main character is Claudia Lynn, who is a recently graduated English major from New York, whose brother has secured for her a job writing a very boring newsletter at like a financial company, because that's, you know, what he does. He's in business consulting. He wants his family to be well set up. And Claudia is the baby of the family. She has an older brother and an older sister. And she always feels like she's been babied a bit, but she wants to do her own thing. And so she has left this job and she has started a job working for like a private investigation firm, verifying people who are on dating apps. So if you are on a dating app, you want to make sure that this person that you are chatting with really works at this place where he or she says that she works, that, you know, he or she is the same age, that they live in the city, that they, you know, are who they say that they are. And so this sort of private investigation firm, Veracity, are people telling the truth? They work out of a townhouse and they use different tools to verify people's online dating personas. We start to see that maybe some of these tools are a little shady. Like there's a phone tracker. So if you think, oh, well, I've signed up to be on this dating site, you don't think that somebody else is going to be tracking your location. That seems really scary, right? But according to the founder of Veracity, this is something that you agree to when you sign up for these dating apps. So they are permitted to track people's locations. But that seems a little surprising to Claudia. But what is really surprising is when one of their clients turns up dead. It doesn't help that she didn't pay her bill. Claudia is a lifelong reader of mystery novels, and she wants to get to the bottom of this. It's reported to be a suicide, but Claudia finds evidence that surprises her. She does not think that this person would have committed suicide, but no one else is interested, not the police and not her coworkers at Veracity. So she starts looking into it on her own, breaking protocol with her new company, and starting to look into the background of the companies that they purportedly work with. And from the description, the deeper she digs, the more she discovers that nothing, her client, the death, the dating platforms that claim to know us better than we know ourselves, Veracity, even her own family may be as it seems. I liked this. I like mysteries in general, and I thought this one was fun. I loved her family and how they get drawn into it. She also has a roommate who's a fun side character. But also because Claudia is herself a mystery reader, there are lots of little tropes that are pointed out and allusions to other mysteries, whether Claudia is saying, oh, it's just like when this happened in that book, which I may or may not have said to myself at times. And so
right. Me too.
That's something that I enjoyed about the story, but I also just enjoyed getting to the bottom of what happened to the client. So, and I believe the second one is out this fall. So if this is one that you enjoy, there'll be more coming.
I love mysteries. I'm looking forward to that one.
Really,
that's my thing that I listen to most of the time on audio, back and forth to work. So I can't wait.
I'm excited to hear that there's actually going to be a sequel, because I finished the book and I thought, oh, this feels like it could be a series, but there was no information at the time. And now you say there is going to be a follow-up. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. So those, to recap, are our six picks for Battle of the Books. They are, once again, The Dead Romantics, A Romance by Ashley Poston, Early Morning Riser, a sort of character study set in Northern Michigan by Katherine Heine, Lessons in Chemistry, a historical novel written by Bonnie Garmus, Never Caught, The Washington's Relentless Pursuit of Their Runaway Slave, Ona Judge by Erica Armstrong Dunbar. That's a nonfiction book. Remarkably Bright Creatures, a novel about an octopus and some people, by Shelby Van Pelt. And The Verifiers, a mystery by Jane Peck. Once again, the battle will take place on Saturday, November 18th, 2023 at 2 p.m. at the main library in the auditorium. All of the trivia questions will come from the six books that we have talked about today. So you've got a few months to read them before that November date. I believe there are 40 questions, so they'll be split up between the different books. You can create your own team. So your team can have up to six people, six books. You can split them up. You can all try to read all of them. However you do it is up to you. But you will not be allowed to bring any notes or copies of the book or phones into the battle. So whatever you read, you're going to have to make note of the character names and places and all the little details about the book. You're going to have to be responsible for remembering that. But it is also fun. There are snacks. There's music.
I would say that.
And there are prizes. There are real prizes. So everyone will get a snack at a minimum, or you can earn a prize if your team answers the most questions correctly.
And we have traditionally also given a prize for team spirit. However, we, the judges, deem that we highly encourage you to come up with a clever team name, and a themed costume for your team goes a long way towards winning a spirit prize.
Yes. And you don't have to be a grown-up to participate, but all of the books do come from the adult section of the library, just so you know. And they are available all throughout the CMPL system. The books are.
Yep, both physically and virtually.
Yeah. Registration is open now, given the fact that we know that people want to be able to register early so that they can lock that in to get their team together. So if you are interested in being at the battle, you can actually register now.
And we look forward to seeing you there.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care. See you at the battle.